Hello, and welcome to Tennis Stories. I'm your host, Danisha Boston Hill, head of NJTL Strategic Partnerships and Events at USTA Eastern. So everyone has a tennis story. And on this podcast, we're interviewing some interesting folks in our USTA section that's New York, New Jersey, and parts of Connecticut. My guest today is Dr. Ursilia DeFilippis, Assistant Professor of Cardiology and Advanced Heart Failure and Transplant Cardiologist at New York Presbyterian. Her specialty is in advanced heart failure cardiologist with an interest in women's health issues. She was also a competitive tennis player during her undergraduate years at Yale University. Dr. DeFilippis, thank you so much for sitting down with us today. I know you just had a baby, and this is really a busy time for you, so we really appreciate your time, and congratulations.
Thank you so much to you and the USTA Eastern team. I'm really excited to be here, and thank you again for the invitation.
And so let's just jump right into it. So we know you're postpartum right now, but do you make it a habit of playing tennis normally, pre or in the future?
Yes. So prior to my pregnancy, I was trying to play tennis fairly regularly, particularly in the summers. I go home to New Jersey, which is where I grew up. So I did grow up playing in the USTA Eastern section. And I look forward to hopefully getting back in this summer soon.
Fantastic. Do you watch any tennis? And if so, who's your favorite player on tour right now?
So I love watching tennis. It really gets me so excited to get back on the court. There's so much energy. I will say that growing up and still, my favorite player has been Serena Williams, because I think that she creates and embodies a really powerful message for young women of all backgrounds who are growing up trying to achieve their dreams. And I think she's really done a lot for the sport of tennis. And so she is someone I really look up to and who is my favorite player.
Yeah, we love her dearly. And so let's just start out with your personal tennis story. Now, we knew you played in college, but at what age did you pick up a racket and did you play growing up?
Yes, thank you. I started playing tennis when I was 5 years old. I started initially with some clinics, again, in New Jersey, where I grew up, and then I began playing in tournaments. I think I played my first USTA Eastern round robin when I was around 10 years old, and then I played at Milburn High School in Milburn, New Jersey, while also playing competitively in USTA Eastern tournaments before going to college. And then after college, I was in Boston for some of my medical training, and I was lucky enough to play on a team there with many other women who had also played in college. And that was a really fun experience. So more recently, I've still been playing with a different group of people. Again, as I mentioned, most commonly in the summer. But that's the great thing about tennis. It's really a lifelong sport. And so you can continue to play it even as your life takes you in different directions.
Absolutely. And so you were the ideal person for today's podcast. And we thank you. What were some of your most memorable experiences at Yale women's tennis?
Well, in my first year as a freshman, we won the Ivy League championship and went to the national tournament. I think for me, that was a big thing, winning the Ivy League as well. But really, I think a lot of what I look back on during my tennis time was about the relationships I made and what I learned about myself in terms of what I could do, my limitations, and how to respond to that, both physically as well as emotionally.
Thank you. And so we're going to jump right into some women's health discussions. So tell me more about your focus in medicine, specifically in health disparities and outcomes that affect women's heart health.
Sure. Thank you so much. I remember taking a class my freshman year in college and learning that the studies where we initially learned about aspirin in preventing cardiovascular events really came from studies that were primarily men. And I remember that specifically, and that was part of what drove me to study women's studies and women's health as an undergrad, knowing that I wanted to incorporate that with my medical career since I was pre-med at the time as well. And so I think, you know, it's really important because cardiovascular disease is the number one killer in women. And despite that being the case, the American Heart Association has actually done serial studies over time. And in 2019, in one of their most recent studies, they found that knowledge that cardiovascular disease was the leading cause of death had actually declined among women. And that was particularly true among Hispanic women and non-Hispanic Black women. And also they noted that particularly younger women believed that breast cancer was the leading cause of death among women as opposed to cardiovascular disease. And so I think in all elements of cardiology, as well as health more generally, it's important to recognize the differences between women and men, how they respond to different treatments, what their different risks are. And that was something that has always been interesting to me and influenced my interest both in taking care of women with heart failure as well as doing research in that space as well.
Let's go over some heart health issues that may manifest differently in women as opposed to men. Can we talk about that just a little bit here?
Sure. That's a really important point, and I'm glad that you brought that up because I think a lot of times the classic representation of a heart attack, for example, on television or in the media, often involves a man and rarely involves a woman. And so while chest pain is the most common symptom that does present in men and women who are having signs of a heart attack, women are also more likely to experience other symptoms, whether it be shortness of breath, nausea, or feeling like their GI, their stomach is a little bit upset. So feeling nauseous or dizzy, those are symptoms that women may be more likely to experience than men. And it's really important because we know, unfortunately, in many studies that women who are experiencing chest pain and who are having signs that are concerning for a heart attack are less likely than men to get proper care. And that may result in delays to presentation and seeing a doctor in a hospital setting, less likely to get a procedure called a cardiac catheterization, where we look at the arteries to see if there's any blockages, and less likely to be prescribed certain medications that we know are beneficial after a heart attack. And so I think it's really important for women to be attuned to their body. You know, if they're playing tennis and they notice, of course, any chest pain, noticing any pain in the jaw or in the arm that feels a bit unusual, dizziness, lightheadedness, which could reflect an abnormal heart rhythm. These are all things that should prompt an evaluation by a healthcare professional. Or the last one that I would mention is just noticing some change over time, meaning that maybe you always play an hour of singles twice a week, and then you start noticing that after 15 or 30 minutes, you feel more short of breath and more tired than you usually do. That's an important change, and that should prompt evaluation by a healthcare professional to make sure that your heart is working, that the pump is still strong, that the pipes, the arteries are open, and that the rhythm is normal.
Thank you. According to Copenhagen Heart Study published in 2017, it was found that tennis increases life expectancy by 9.7 years, well above other sports studied. Other sports included soccer at 4.7 years, cycling at 3.7 years, swimming at 3.4 years, and jogging at 3.2 years. And based on your wealth of knowledge in cardiology, what do you think it is about tennis that makes it such a good fitness option?
That's great. I think for me, tennis is a great aerobic exercise. There's a lot of start and stop. And the aerobic part helps your heart kind of practice pumping in order to get blood to all of the organs. It also improves muscle mass. And because it's a weight-bearing exercise, it can improve bone health in women. So I think those are some of the physical benefits in terms of improving aerobic capacity. I also think there are mental and emotional benefits to playing tennis, and that also may be playing a role in longevity, especially since it's a sport that people can play at so many ages. And particularly as we get older, we know that the importance of a social community and minimizing loneliness and isolation can also have positive health benefits. And so it may be that for older individuals who are playing in a league or playing doubles, also having those interpersonal relationships can also contribute to overall physical health.
And so often we hear that people love tennis programming, and USTA tennis programming is that social aspect. People build strong relationships amongst their leagues, teams, their doubles partners. Do you think that mental aspect of tennis as a stress reducer has a significant impact on heart health?
I think we do know that stress contributes to cardiovascular disease. And so I think any ways that we can improve wellness, both emotionally and psychologically, will translate as well to physical wellness. And so I do think that having those outlets, particularly ones that also have direct physical benefits, is a great thing. And so I think for all of those reasons, tennis is a great sport. And I look forward to when my daughter will pick up a racket.
Oh, absolutely. Same here. Based on your personal experience playing tennis, why do you think it's important for girls and young women to play a sport like tennis?
That's a great question. So thinking back on my tennis experience, obviously most of or a lot of tennis has an individual component, particularly if you're playing singles, you're playing in tournaments. And I think there's something about an individual sport that can be challenging because it's just you, but I think can also be really empowering. For me, particularly also playing competitive tennis while trying to balance things like schoolwork, that taught me a lot of skills like time management, but which I think have definitely paid off now as a soon-to-be back at work working mom with my newborn. So I think that that is one element for sure in terms of development, as for especially for school-age children. Now, I also do think that being on the court alone does provide a unique opportunity to be introspective about who you are, what you value, how you wish to improve. And I think that that is something that is really hard to replicate in any other setting. You know, you think about how you respond to a challenge, how you respond to losing a match. And I think that can be very defining and help you find your character, particularly in those very pivotal years growing up as a child or an adolescent.
Dr. DeFilippis, on behalf of USTA Eastern, I'd like to thank you for sharing your tennis story with us. If you have any final words, we'd love to hear from you now. And thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much. I guess I will add one thing, which is that, you know, I think it's really important for women to be advocates for their for themselves when it comes to any symptoms they may be experiencing on the tennis court. Because we do know, unfortunately, that there are biases and disparities when it comes to women receiving the cardiovascular care that they need. So when you're on the court, make sure you listen to your body. If you're feeling any chest pain, if you're feeling shortness of breath or something doesn't feel right, see your doctor and be your own advocate. And thank you again for having me today.
Thank you for being with us. Everyone, tune in next month to hear more tennis stories celebrating Autism Acceptance Month. Thanks again for tuning in to Tennis Stories.